Welcome to Generations with Kevin Swanson. It's about the survival of faith, family, and freedom. It's about the future. He's a father of five, and he's committed to preserving a legacy for the next generation. Here's Kevin Swanson.
Welcome to Generations, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, Executive Director for Christian Home Educators, also a pastor. But the reason I'm here today, I'm a father of five, son Daniel in studio with us today. And today, Alex and Brett Harris from The Revolution will be with us on the program. But the topic today is perpetual adolescence, the myth of adolescence. I was amazed just this last Thanksgiving time. I think it was, a month ago or so, when you saw a number of guys camped out by Sam's Club waiting for the new PlayStation. Some of them were camped out there for 48 hours. And here's the kicker. A lot of these guys were 25, 30 years old, waiting for the new PlayStation. What in the world are they doing camping out at 48 hours prior to the release of the new PlayStation? What do these guys do for a living? That was the question on my mind. But, folks, we are seeing a growth of this thing called perpetual adolescence. Since 1950, the median age for marriage for men and women shifted by 5 years. That is, they're marrying much later today than they did back in 1950. And I think I mentioned this a few days ago, but the number of teens working has dropped by 10%, a full 10%. The percentage of teens working dropped by 10% over the last 15 years. And here's a Discovery News article from June of this year. New research is showing that grown-ups are more immature than ever. They have short attention spans. They seek novelty and sensation. They have short cycles of arbitrary fashion and a sense of cultural shallowness. Formal education now extends well past physical maturity, leaving students with minds that are, according to the expert quoted, unfinished minds. People such as academics, teachers, scientists, many other professionals are often strikingly immature outside of their strictly specialist competence in the sense of being unpredictable, unbalanced in priorities, and tending to overreact. And folks, it's affecting colleges. Colleges now are reaching all-time lows, both academically and socially speaking. Academically speaking, about 40% of college grads take no courses in English or American Lit, and nearly 31% have never taken a math course. More than 56% can't calculate the change from $3 after buying a bowl of soup for 60 cents and a sandwich for $1.95, and many cannot read and understand a simple set of directions. A new book by Murray Sperber called Beer and Circus, sounds like a good book, Beer and Circus, the guy writes from Indiana University, he contends that college kids are being fed a junk diet of alcohol, spectator sports, and partying. College kids are also the highest credit risks, and a huge percentage now have a fistful of credit cards. The fastest growing bankruptcy filers are now young adults under 25 years of age. Let's say this very plainly for everybody out there. If your kids attend conventional schools and hang out with conventional youth, folks, they will be immature. They will be immature. Let me say that one more time. If your kids attend conventional schools, hang out with conventional kids, in this day and age, they will be immature at 18. I want to define immaturity before we get on with the Alex and Brett thing. Immaturity is this, an 18-year-old who thinks life is about play. They're standing in line at Sam's Club 48 hours before the new PlayStation makes it. They think life is about iPods, skateboards, and PlayStations. An immature person is an 18-year-old who's unable to get out of bed on his own and work a 40-hour-a-week job consistently and produce. An immature youth is an 18-year-old who's unable to resolve conflicts with family and friends. An 18-year-old who's unable to budget money, financially plan, save, and invest. An immature person is any 18-year-old who's unable to discuss political issues with adults without resorting to words like, words like dude, or awesome. An 18-year-old is unable to share the basic truths of the Bible with his 6-year-old brother. An 18-year-old who is unable to control his eating habits, sleeping habits, and exercise habits to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Or an 18-year-old who is unable to manage a household. Now, financially, I understand they may not be ready to be married. That's okay. It may take 4 to 5 years to have the financial wherewithal to get married, but he's got to be able to get out of bed and make a living. And he's got to be able to manage a household. That, my friends, is a mature person. In a moment, we want to talk to two 18-year-old men. I said men, mature men. These guys, Alex and Brett Harris, have produced the Revolution website dedicated to raising expectations for young people today. Alex and Brett Harris is next on Generation. Stay with me. Welcome back to Generations, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson with you, Mike Side today. Today, the myth of adolescence. With me on the air is Alex and Brett Harris. They are the authors of a new website, therevolution.com. And by the way, this was covered on World Magazine several months ago, and you guys got some good press on that. Appreciate that. And, well, you talk about the myth of adolescence, an article that you wrote on that website. And, you know, we've got a lot of problems out there. Fornication at all-time high. Number of teens working. This just came out a few months ago. Number of teens working has dropped 10% in 15 years. And, you know, we've got a lot of low expectations out there. Do you really think the maturity level for the average 18-year-old is dropping year by year?
I don't know if it's a steady drop, but it's definitely been a huge drop in the last 100 years, and it definitely is a result of those lower expectations. I think what we're seeing is the opposite of what the Apostle Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 20, where he says, "Brothers, stop thinking like children, be infants in evil, but in your thinking, be mature." And we have a culture right now that's telling our young people, be mature in evil, be mature in foolishness, but in your thinking and your behavior, be childish. And I think we're seeing the results of that in many areas.
Why the childish behavior? Is it just due to the public schools, the media, the entertainment that's out there? What do you think is producing the immaturity?
Part of that has to do with what you mentioned earlier, the myth of adolescence. And we don't mean to discredit the idea of adolescence as a physical transition of growing physically, but at the same time, adolescence in our culture today has become this nebulous period where you're not a child, you're not an adult, you can't really be expected to do anything well or with maturity or responsibility, but at the same time, you're expected to have all this freedom of adults to do whatever you want. And we're seeing the effects of that in that kids are just using the teen years to goof off and have fun rather than really buckling down and preparing for life.
This is Brett jumping in. I think that the childishness is often the result of a lot of freedom with no responsibility, which is, it's half right. The young people should be getting additional freedom and ability to make good decisions as they get older, but they're not being given the responsibility of making those wise decisions, and they're not expected to make the right decisions. And so it's freedom without responsibility.
Part of it may be due to the affluence we've enjoyed over the last 15 to 20 years in this society, but I'm not sure that affluence is going to continue, especially if we are creating young people who don't know how to work and produce. And maybe that's really what we're after here, is training our young people to work and be prepared for a career, to get out of bed at 18 and go to a 40-hour-a-week job and actually produce something.
We definitely encourage young people to make the effort to do hard things. That's the motto from from the revolution, do hard things. We see that really combating the low expectations. We see that combating the complacency that many in our generation have. And we really see that doing hard things is something that starts not just when you're 18 and it's time to get out of bed and get a job, but something that should be the motto, if you will, of the young person in preparing themselves for whatever jobs, whatever calling God has for them as adults.
I love that motto, do hard things. It's simple, but it says a lot. Do hard things. Guys, what have you done? What kind of hard things are you doing?
We sort of have a slight addiction to doing hard things. We have a tendency, and I think this is not something that we boast in, since it's really just the way we've been raised, the expectations we've been raised with, but we have a tendency to just jump off into the deep end. For instance, last fall, we without any prior legal experience, we were accepted for a two-month internship in the Alabama Supreme Court. And that was just an incredible time where we were able to contribute greatly to the reviewing and reviewing of legal briefs, the writing of recommendations to the court, and even drafting text for legal opinions with no prior legal experience. But what was apparent, I guess, to our employer was that we we were willing to do hard things, we were willing to learn, to try, and that we had proven in the past that we were able to apply ourselves. We've found that the hardest things that we've done, even though we have had jobs, we've worked out of state, staying with a good Christian family, but away from our own family, working in four statewide political campaigns as grassroots coordinators, doing hard things like that, and the internship and even our work with the revolution. Those are all some of the hardest things we've done, but the very hardest are actually not the big things, not the big exciting things, but it's the small decisions. It's the honoring your parents and the cleaning up your room and just being faithful in Bible reading and devotion. And those are actually some of the hardest things to do because no one sees them, and they're not as easy to say, hey, look at what I'm doing. And that's really something that we stress on our website. The hardest things are often the smallest things.
What does it take to do hard things? Okay, you're about ready to clean your room, or you're about ready to honor your mom and dad, or you're about ready to take that internship with the Supreme Court of Alabama. You know, what does it take? I mean, what character traits does it take to jump in head first and involve yourself in hard things?
Well, that's a great question. One of the primary motivations that we have stressed on our website and what is true in our lives is just the scriptural command and the scriptural exhortation to do hard things. It says, and I believe in Lamentations, that it's good for the young man to bear the yoke in his youth. And we really have taken that to heart. And that's something that we have when we're faced with a decision, do we just choose the easy route, or we do the thing that really stretches us, makes us get out of our comfort zone? We say, no, it's good for the young man to bear the yoke in his youth. And we believe that verse is there for a purpose, and we believe that verse has shown itself to be true in lives of great men and women throughout history, that young people who use the teen years to do hard things, to stretch themselves, to gain new skills, to gain greater levels of maturity and responsibility, they're the ones who go on and are ready when the great crises of history confront them. They confront those crises and they make something happen. And a lot of the great leaders, you look back at their early years and you can see them doing hard things even then.
And may God give us these young men and women who are willing to step forward and be willing to do hard things and hopefully meet the crises that our culture is facing even now. Let's get back to our culture. I want to critique the culture just a little bit more. We talk about the culture. We talk about fun rather than work. But there's also this me-centeredness, this me-centered. It's all about me, me, me. The iPods, the PlayStations, the Game Boys, very me-centered in terms of the play. And in fact, I just heard Chad, my assistant, told me that the man of the year for Time Magazine is you. It's everybody, all right? So everybody gets to be a Time's man of the year, as an indication that there are no real expectations for anybody. But it seems to me that we are putting me forward. How do we address that among our young people today, and how are you addressing it?
I mean, it's very interesting that in addressing this self-centeredness, you're mentioning things like iPods and PlayStations and all this technology, and it really is true that technology is something that just isolates us, that can really pull us apart from people in some ways, though it does provide certain opportunities for interaction. But we've on our website we had a whole series on teens and technology called Busy Signals. And we just what we did through that series is we went through and we looked at the media multitasking that's going on where young people they're spending 72 hours per week using media on the internet, watching television, listening to their iPods. But they're actually spending more time than that because they're using multiple mediums at the same time. So they're actually cramming up to 44 hours of activity into a single 24-hour day simply because they're doing multiple things at once. And so what we addressed in that series was just looking at how is this affecting us? Should we just mindlessly embrace all this technology? And we went through and saw how it affects our thought life, how it affects our productivity, and how it affects our relationships. And our conclusion in the end wasn't that that technology is bad, but that we have a very self-centered view of it. We have we overuse it, but also that we have a lack of vision. That some of these technologies give us a great opportunity to do good, to meet other young people. For instance, our website, we have thousands and thousands of young people, many of whom might live even out in the country where they don't have a lot of interaction with like-minded young people who love God and who care about pursuing excellence and preparing for life. But on this website, through the internet, we're able to interact. We're able to encourage each other. And so these are mediums that either can create self-centeredness, such as MySpace and all of these very individualistic websites, but it also has the potential for good, and that's something that we've tried to push the young people on our website is take back technology for Christ, and that involves showing what it can do. But also what it can't do, that there's left beyond the screen.
Part of the immaturity I think we are dealing with today is an immaturity with relationships. You guys named relationships as something that was breaking down in the electronic revolution, and I think it is breaking down. But what we have to do is use electronics to improve relationships. And actually, that's what we do. Our children take piano lessons from Grandma, who happens to be 2,000 miles away in Oregon, but they do it by means of the telephone. So without that technology, we would not be able to draw closer to our relatives. And my children have a lot more opportunity to engage with their grandparents because of that once a week, 1 hour lesson. So there are examples where we can use technology in a proper way. But let's talk about how we can create strong relationships and prepare young people for good relational living. They're going to get married someday, have families. If they're adolescent in their relationships, they will not be able to accomplish that. How are you encouraging young people to maintain good relationships and learn how to be good in relationships?
Well, the expert on that is our older brother, Josh. But we have touched on relationships to a large extent on our website as well. And one of the things that we've really stressed is that, just like we've said, that the teen years are the training ground for the rest of our life, that includes the area of relationships, and that these years really are the training ground for who we will be as husbands and wives, as fathers and as mothers. And one of the things we've stressed is the importance of for young men to treat their sisters and their mother in the way that they hope to one day treat their wife, and for young ladies to treat their fathers and their brothers in many ways like they would hope to treat their husband in the future. And we've seen to be really eye opening for a lot of young people, because They've never thought of that. Well, yeah, once the romance that we see on television wears off, once that spark is not there in the same way the movies show it, then this is another person who you're living with day in, day out. This is like my sister or my mother, and if I can't live with them and be considerate to them and be loving to them, I'm not going to be able to do that with my wife or with my husband either. And that's been something that we think has been very helpful, both for our understanding and our own preparation, but also for the young people on our website as well.
Well, guys, it's exciting to me that there are some young men out there who are raising the expectations for young people today, because there is a tremendous lack of maturity on college campuses and among adults today that's going to, I think, affect our culture negatively in a big way in the next generation or two. So appreciate what you guys are doing. Now, you are homeschooled. You've been homeschooled, and a lot of this, quote-unquote, revolution is happening among the homeschoolers. Why is that? I mean, is this an exclusively homeschool phenomenon, this desire to retain a level of maturity among young people? Is this a homeschool phenomena? Is homeschooling the panacea, or is it happening elsewhere?
It started in large part with homeschoolers, and we still have a very high percentage of homeschoolers who are members of our website and our discussion forums, but it's not exclusively homeschoolers. It started out that way, partly because most of Brett's and my acquaintances and friends were within the homeschool circle. But it has really grown, and I think we have something to say to both, because not only do we view the public schools and a lot of the culture, the youth culture that's embodied in the public schools as really reinforcing the myth of adolescence and the low expectations to a large degree. But at the same time, homeschoolers need the message of do hard things as well, because it's easy for homeschoolers to feel like because they're not in the system, because in many ways they can avoid some of the things that public schoolers may be exposed to more often, and because the statistics show that homeschoolers will often do better in grades and test scores and all these things in career, that they can get this feeling of complacency that because they're better than the mediocre average, that they're okay, when the reality is they're not meeting their full potential either, and they also are being crippled by the low expectations of our culture, because they're looking at culture still rather than God's word and history as the standard for maturity and excellence. So we definitely see both as needing this message, and we've seen both embrace the message, and both sides have increasingly just caught the fire and the vision for doing hard things in the teen years.
Ladies and gentlemen, Alex and Brett Harris. The website is therevolution.com. That's R-E-B-E-L-O-T-I-O-N. Therevolution.com. You need to visit these guys and check out what they have to say at therevolution.com. Alex and Brett Harris, thank you, and God bless you and your ministry.
God bless you, sir. Thank you so much.
And ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with this program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. Let me invite you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.